Vince, how are you?
I'm good, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Good. Hopefully the weather hasn't been too ridiculous in your neck of the woods, but always great to catch up with you. And there's just so much to talk about, whether it be unpacking the NFL draft, which we will continue to do for quite some time, or just seeing arrivals in terms of the transfer portal for Tennessee football. And who knows, maybe some last word on some departures, which we know, one, we found that out last week, still waiting to find out where perhaps Henry Toto could land. But there's just so much swirling about, isn't there?
There is. Ready to dive into it with you guys.
And if you have a question or comment for Vince, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, why don't we start with your reaction to where Tennessee's VFLs landed in the NFL draft and one thus far free agent signing?
Well, it was obviously disappointing for a lot of people, especially with the expectations for Trey Smith and how highly regarded he was coming into Tennessee, and how highly people think of him, have thought of him, and think of him as a VFL. Then, you know, that was hard for people to sit through and watch. No one expected him to fall that far. I had heard before the draft that, you know, the medicals were so difficult for the NFL to get, and it's on a different standard. I know he was able to manage it at Tennessee, but the standards are different, and they have so much medical personnel and expectations for practice that I think it was hard for a lot of teams to get the information to get assurance on how to act a plan for him. How much he was going to be able to test, what medicine he would need to take, if any. And just that was the biggest struggle, and a lot of analysts will tell you that, and that's what I heard and digging and calling, was that the medical was the biggest challenge still right now with not having the normal preparation from season to NFL draft. And I think with the lack of clarity on how to handle Trey Smith, it took him off of half of the team's board in the league, is what I was told, or about half. And then he's also a guy that I think is, well, a couple things. One, I think he was really impacted by his lack of being able to practice on an everyday basis. 2 years ago, only practiced a couple times the entire season. Last year, he practiced a couple times a week, but that's not what everybody else is doing. And I think that slowed his development some. He's a perfectionist, so he is never satisfied with his performance. And not being able to do that, I think it was impressive he did how well he did despite that. But I think that kind of took some of the tape away from him that wasn't maybe as impressive as you would have expected for a guy with his accolades and his ability and physical presence. And then also because he is more of a power gap scheme offense type of offensive lineman, at least that's what a lot of the NFL thinks of him, it limits some of the teams that would be an ideal fit for him. So you're chopping down teams not having him on their board. Then you're chopping down some other teams that do a lot of perimeter running and zone type of run scheme that they're not ideal, so they're not going to have them as high on the board, and you're cutting down some of those options. And I think that's what led to him falling like he did. And you know, as far as the medical, I know for some people are like, well, guys can commit assaults and crimes, and the NFL can overlook that better, but then there's a medical question and they want to really hold it against guys. And the reason for that is because it's the unknown. You know, the NFL has all the answers, except for maybe recently for draft picks and the Titans, but they have all the answers, and they're going to, during the whole interview process, they're going to ask guys about their situation. And it's just a matter of how they answer it. So That could have been what held Bryce Thompson back as well. And I was told that he was off of a lot of teams' board also. So, but the medical was such an unknown, and it's out of their control. And you know the NFL loves to be in control and have all the answers going in. And the medical scares them because they don't have the answers, and there's variance in what those answers are from team to team. And the Chiefs felt good enough to move him down in their board a little bit. And I also think don't assume that no one was considering him earlier in the draft. That's another factor, is that I think they and some other teams, I'm sure, were considering him earlier in the draft. But then maybe some other players that they have high on their board as well slip to them that they didn't anticipate they would be there. Then they have to sit there and think, okay, we got this player, and this player. This player probably going to go to the team behind us. So do we risk not taking him? This other player, he may not be there when we get there next round. Do we have the ability to move up if we want to come back and get him? This player, a lot of teams may not have him on their board, so there's a greater likelihood that he'll be there when we come back around next round. And then that's part of what factors in their decisions. It's not like no one believes in him earlier. It's risk-reward, and then what does the board look like at the time? And I think those are all things that impacted Trey Smith. That being said, just real quick, love Josh Palmer to the Chargers. That's about where I thought he would go in the third round. Obviously, now he has a fantastic future superstar quarterback to work with, 4,300 passing yards, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. I mean, it could not be more different than what he had at Tennessee, which I think kind of teams were looking at it like, wow, what lack of help he had at quarterback in college. Poor guy. And that hurts an evaluation with players around him. But that being said, with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, you have two top-notch players, so you have to come in and try to be the guy. And I think all the other guys, 20 catches, 28 catches, I think he can be in that 3-4 range at receiver and just focus on football. Loved his video. And he was another guy that really benefited from Derek Ansley being on that staff and being able to talk about him with Brandon Staley. And Brandon Staley, the new head coach of the Chargers, a former grad assistant under Derek Dooley at the University of Tennessee. Now he's the head football coach in the National Football League with that franchise in Los Angeles. I think it was a terrific landing spot for Josh Palmer and San Diego. And then real quick on Bryce Thompson, the Saints could not have been a better spot for him because they like versatility. They're not scared off by guys that have maybe had some issues that are getting another opportunity. They also have had great success with Tennessee players. Not just Tennessee players, but undrafted Tennessee players, which is something that they've been able to have success with. Shai Tuttle and Marquez Callaway. Callaway is listed second team at wide receiver now. Tuttle is listed at first team at nose tackle, so he might get an opportunity to start this year. Obviously, Alvin Kamara, Ethan Wolf is on that roster also. So there's five VFLs now, and he is one of only seven cornerbacks in that room right now, counting undrafted free agent signings. There's only one other guy, and they drafted another corner in the middle of the draft. So it is very light at that position, and those were things that were very beneficial to Callaway and Tuttle and why they had success, because the Saints had a need at that position. They didn't heavily address it in the draft. Now you bring in an undrafted free agent, boom, great opportunity, make the team. I think Bryce Thompson has an excellent chance with his versatility and the track record of undrafted free agent and opportunity at those positions. He has a great shot to make that team from day one.
All right, I got to ask you this, and this doesn't make sense to me, but you're talking about the NFL with all this unknown about Trey Smith. Are you telling me that the NFL did not ask Tennessee's team doctors, what was your plan this year and what was your plan the next year? What did you do that he could play? They don't have the answers to that? Really?
Well, no. I'm not saying they don't have those answers, but I think the plan is they have to know what the plan is. They're not just going to say, all right, you did that at Tennessee, sure, we're good to go. They just have different standards for their medical and how they're going to operate. And they're going to have the expectation of practicing more frequently. Can he show, or has he evolved since the blood clots to be able to show that he can practice like everybody else now? Or is it still going to be a managing type of thing? Because if it's managed, then that's something that he could do in college, but they have more of an expectation for practicing in the National Football League. So it's not just, okay, he did it at Tennessee, this is what you did. Okay, we're good. We'll do that and we'll be good to go. There's a different level of expectation to practice and to know exactly what his medicals are, rather than just taking what Tennessee did. They want to dig into that even more and dig in to what it's going to be moving forward versus what it was while he was at Tennessee. One
So
other
you're
thing on
not,
Trey Smith to keep an eye on. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
so you're not saying that that there was an unknown about what was going on in Tennessee. The unknown is, could he handle it in the NFL? It's, right? That's what you're saying, if
Exactly.
I'm hearing you right.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, and here's what I'd be interested in. I don't know the answer to this. Russell Okung and David Andrews both had blood clots. They played in the NFL. I don't know if Trey Smith's plan was similar to theirs. But here's the other thing, Vince. In the NFL, you're talking about practicing. They don't hit much in the NFL at practice. That's the issue with Trey Smith. So why is that such a big deal?
Right.
Because they don't hit in practice in the NFL during the week. They try to keep them safe, right?
That's a fair question, Jimmy. That's a fair question. But I do think they want, I don't know exactly how Okung and Andrews handled their situations. Maybe
Right.
they were able to take a test to show that they could practice without the medicine. Maybe the medicine, I'm not a doctor, maybe the medicine, after a certain period of time, you can wean off of it. I know obviously at Tennessee, he'd take the medicine and then come off of it for the weekend. And then there's obviously, risk it, once you come off of it, but that's how they were able to manage it while he was at Tennessee. I just think that what they want to know is moving forward, how can this be managed, and could they get the answers beforehand the draft? And I think that's where it was. There's still the lack of, and I don't know what it is, whether it's taking a test or whatever, but I think that's where the gray area, the fogginess, scared some teams off, and they were still talking about that. Teams are still talking about what to do with a lot of the medicals, whether it's Trey Smith or a guy like Dylan Moses, who was another five-star that had a terrific career, although with some injuries at Alabama, some teams were scared off by him. So it's not just Trey Smith, but I think the medicals were late and foggy, and that set some teams back. And when we get a chance, I know we got a break, but I do want to talk about how Trey Smith fits into that offensive line of KC.
You're late and foggy.
Yeah, I've been told worse, John, so keep tossing those back.
We'll get a break. We've got more with Vince coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Our guest, Vince Ferrara, as he joins us this hour. Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. Let's go to the phones where Roger joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Roger.
Well, hey, Don Jimmy, how y'all doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fine. Doing great. Hey, Vince, buddy, how you doing, Vince?
I'm good, Roger. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing fine. Doing fine. I just want to ask you, Vince, about you too, Jimmy and John, about the draft. I just want to ask you every year. I know everybody draft everybody different, but I just want to ask you, how important for I know we drafted the two this year. I just want to ask you, how important, how many guys every year is important? How many guys are you supposed to? I know every need is different, but I just want to ask you, how for every year, Vince, how many for Tennessee wide involved? How many people is important to draft for is getting every year.
Well, the numbers have really gone down from what they used to be, okay. Obviously, around in and around the national championship. So that's, you know, one of the things that's tough to watch with Tennessee. Roger, in the last seven seasons, Tennessee has had 13 total draft picks. 13 okay. in seven seasons, including, and Jimmy and John have outlined this before, three of those seasons where they didn't have anybody drafted in 19, 16, and 15. So that number has to come up. Now, for Tennessee in the NFL, yeah. they've had a number of undrafted free agents be able to find roles, and maybe, you know, even some guys that were taken even outperform what they did at Tennessee. Certainly Alvin Kamara comes to mind as a third-round pick that has outperformed that in the NFL. But it just shows the struggle that Tennessee has had. Here's another stat, and guys, this is astounding. I went back and counted this, and it's incredible, and it really shows where Tennessee is compared to the elite. In the last seven seasons, Tennessee has only had six players drafted in the first three rounds of the draft. Six
wow.
in the first three wow. rounds in the last 7 years. Alabama wow. had six drafted in the first round Thursday alone.
Wow.
And during that same wow. seven-year period of the top three rounds, Alabama's had 46 players drafted in that same stretch. Tennessee's had
wow.
six. So, yes, wow. nobody compares to Alabama. They are the standard, the bar. I get that. But you're yeah. not even on the same planet. Like, there are so many other teams that have outperformed Tennessee during the stretch. It really is rough. I'm not trying to pile on. It's just during this time is another reminder of it's been about the coaching for sure, but it's been about players leaving and players not signing the right players and player development. I mean, it's been all these things lead to this kind of rough stretch during the NFL draft, and it's been on the decline. Other than a couple of years of Butch Jones, there was yeah. six in 2017. But Jimmy, as you know, that this is not new. It just continues to be tough to digest for Tennessee fans.
It has been, and to
yeah.
me,
yeah.
the big thing that you underscored. You want difference makers, right? Well, those typically are going in your first three rounds of the draft. And with Tennessee having mm-hmm. so few of those, other than yeah. 2017, and one of their difference makers was woefully underused, Alvin Kamara. So, yeah, it's yeah. – and I was sitting here looking at the draft. There were some years where Tennessee had 9-10 players drafted. That's kind of what you're looking for in 1 year
yeah.
over a span of – 5 or 6 or 7 years.
Right.
Yeah. And also I just want to ask you, Vince, and John and Vince and Jimmy too about Titans. I just want to ask you, I'm just curious about this question. I don't think it answers the question or not, but I know that you're talking about Aaron Rodgers at Green Bay. I just want to ask you if he left Green Bay, for the Titans, going to Titans, I just want to ask you, but say if he went to the Titans for some reason, I just want to ask you, would he be a good fit someday? And say if he went to the Titans, would he be a good fit, though, you think, or not?
Awful fit. He needs to go to New Orleans.
okay.
They got this guy, Tannehill. Yeah, like, they don't need
Rod.
Aaron Rodgers
would be a great fit anywhere. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah. But, Roger, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great night. But Vince says that that Aaron Rodgers would only be suited to carry a clipboard if it was Tampa.
Ooh.
And number 12 is taken.
Right. He would be a great backup in Tampa.
That's right. Of course, that's if he can make the team and beat out Kyle Trask. But if you have a question or comment for Vince, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Vince, what do you think of the Texas transfer that Tennessee got a linebacker, Juwan Mitchell, who led Texas in tackles last year.
Really like him. Active, athletic, seems to diagnose plays really well. I don't know that he had an elite defensive line in front of him. Not that that's going to be the case at Tennessee, but he was still able to get to the football. And he's immediately a starter and their best linebacker based on what we've seen on tape. So I think it's a great addition. It's obviously the biggest need on this football team other than figuring out the quarterback position. But in terms of the unknown and the numbers, you know, linebacker was big. So, you know, get some other guys healthy and you know, work around them. I think then you can start to maybe feel a little bit better about the position, but certainly addressing it, a starting point, was big for this defense. So I really like the addition of Juwan Mitchell.
USC defensive line grad transfer Caleb Tremblay. What does he bring to the table?
You know, Jimmy, I think he's a rotational defensive lineman. I don't think he's a difference maker. Yes, he comes from a big program at USC, but – you know, I was looking, USC had a number of defensive players taken in the draft, and especially in day two. So I was looking out for him in some of those highlights that they kept showing, and I didn't really notice him very much, to be honest with you. And when he was on the field, he didn't really pop or look like, man, that guy's changing the line of scrimmage, or he was about to get a sack or anything like that. He just didn't show up very much in some of those defensive highlights. I, you know, what, 21 tackles, 3 starts in his career, just not a ton of productivity. And I know he's a guy that went to JUCO first, but I think he's a body, and they needed those also, especially because they're not going to end up with much in terms of the signing class on the D-line. He's an addition, but I don't think right now I would project him as a guy that would make a massive difference on that D-line. And I wonder if that's still a position they're going to look to address, especially with Jay Hardy from Chattanooga still out there, or now recently newly out there from Auburn, who Tennessee was obviously in a recruiting battle for to begin with.
Well, I was going to ask you if there's anybody else in the transfer portal Tennessee had its eye on. Certainly Jay Hardy would be among those, right?
He would, and I think Maurice Hampton from LSU would be another one. Now, with Hampton, it's a little bit more of an unknown. Like, what, you know, he had told Paul Maneri, because he was a two-sport guy, played baseball at LSU as well, even though football was kind of his priority, but Paul Maneri said he had told me that he was going to quit football and just concentrate on baseball. And Maneri is like, well, I don't know if that's going to work out. You're kind of behind a lot of the other guys on the roster because you've been having football your number one. You sure you want to do this? And then he ends up sitting out spring practice because to concentrate on academics, and he hit the transfer portal. So, who knows where he's at, but he's a kid from Memphis, and because of that in-state connection, maybe you'd have an opportunity for him. He still, you know, I think has a ton of skills, was highly rated and recruited coming out of high school. So maybe you feel like you can go that direction. But my thinking is that Jay Hardy would be at or near the top of the priority list for Tennessee. I don't know that they're just going to keep adding it, whatever position they can find the guy. I think it's at specific positions, and wouldn't surprise me either a difference making safety, maybe someone that can play up in the box in nickel type of situations, or someone else on the D line that can be a difference maker. I think Hardy would have that potential. I think those would be two of the top guys they would look at.
If you have a question or comment for Vince, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Vince, how weird is it not to have Tennessee baseball playing either today or tomorrow in the only midweek where they don't have a game scheduled?
It is very strange, John. It's understandable, of course, with finals, as you know, but we're used to it. Kind of, we get in our routine when we get going during the season, and we'll certainly miss it. But I totally get it, and it sounds like it's something that will be very useful. You combine that, John, with not having a Sunday to play a game. You know, they're getting out of routine a little bit for those guys. And Tony Vitale even mentioned to you guys yesterday that he's kind of excited that they're on the road so they can kind of cut down on the off week, so to speak, and sort of get back into it. I think getting on the road is something they enjoy doing. They've won 5 straight series in SEC play dating back to 2019, which is just so impressive. And they, you know, seem to really enjoy that. So I think they'll be fine. I wouldn't imagine that they'll be rusty or anything like that. I think they'll be locked in just fine, and they have a great opportunity against a team that's struggling mightily in SEC play. They've taken some teams to the wire for sure, but they're last in hitting and pitching in the league, and it's not really even close in either category, and obviously last in the league in wins. I don't think Tennessee will take them for granted or overlook them. That's something that, you know, fans will have an expectation for, but I think they'll take it one game at a time and be just fine in Columbia.
Well, I certainly hope so, and they have one series win. That was against Texas A&M, which is among those that Tennessee has defeated. But I do think that they have been a tough out at times. They got one win at Kentucky. They lost 5-4 in another one, 10-2. They got wiped out in the opener. They did have a close one against Vanderbilt, 3-1, and then against South Carolina. That one was just really one-sided. But then the total run differential between them and Florida in a series that took place in Gainesville was a total of 7 runs, all 3 games. 3-1 win, a 3-run victory in the first game, 2 runs in games 2 and 3, and then they got the win in the opener against Georgia and then lost 7-5 and 10 when they had a chance to win it. It was a late rally by the Bulldogs. So I do think this is a team that, for whatever reason, has played Tennessee tough. And so I'm like you. I expect Tennessee to get the job done, but I also think that it's not going to be a walkover.
No, they have SEC talent, and for them, they've been their own worst enemy. I think they have about 90 more walks than any other staff in the league. I mean, it is insane. And then they've hit the fewest home runs by a bunch in the league as well, 20, 25, something like that. So, it seems like blowouts are close games, kind of what Mizzou has done a fair amount of. But, you know, if Tennessee slips in a game, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, my God, we're supposed to beat this team. What do we do? I think they've taken a few of those lessons before, Lipscomb being one of them, that, you know, we're supposed to beat this team. What do we do? They've gone through that now, and we'll see if they respond to it better this time. They've always responded to loss as well, and I think they'll be fine this weekend.
Yeah, Tennessee and Vanderbilt tied for the top spot in the Eastern Division. Florida now just a game out after the series win against the Commodores. And if you just compare the schedules, Tennessee and Florida on the road 2 of the last 3 weekends. Vanderbilt's home for 2 of the 3. Tennessee at Missouri, home against #1 Arkansas, at South Carolina. Vanderbilt home against Alabama, at Ole Miss, home against Kentucky. And then Florida at Kentucky, home against Georgia, at Arkansas. It's interesting that 2 of the 3 trying to win the Eastern Division are going to have to go past the Razorbacks.
Yes, and Florida has struggled on the road. I think they have a losing record on the road in league play, and they've been, I think they might have the best record in the league in home games. So a different team, they're going to have to prove that they can win away from Gainesville. But it's very important for Tennessee, John, as you know, to try to get one of those top four spots for the SEC tournament, because then you get in straight into Wednesday and you don't have to mess around in that single elimination. And look at the standings and how many potentially really good teams are going to have to play on Tuesday in the single elimination.
Yeah.
You could have teams with great records, 18, 19 win type of teams, maybe even more than that, have to play in a 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11 single elimination. I don't think Tennessee or anyone else wants any part of that, considering the depth of this league, and just never know what happens in a one-game type of situation. Tennessee, unfortunately, the last few times they've gone to Hoover have been one and done. You want to avoid that, and getting a top four spot would obviously certainly help with that, to get straight into that double elimination.
Our guest, Vince Ferrara, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Vince's appearance brought to you by our good friends at Waters Equipment. Vince, what's coming up this week on In the Cage, MMA Radio?
We'll look back on this past Saturday's UFC Fight Night show in Las Vegas. Got another one coming up this weekend that's constantly changing, a lot of moving parts, change of the main event and all that. So we'll track all that. Also, no interviews this week, but we're going to do our fun matchmaking segment where we'll go through every division in the UFC and come up with some fun fights that aren't already scheduled that we'd like to see, and see what everyone thinks of those. So that's all coming up. Back to Thursday night this week from 8 until 9 here on 99.1, the Sports Animal. With if Smokies are playing, Smokies will be on the AM, but Will's soccer show, the Starry 11 and 7 to 8, and then in the Cage MMA Radio 8 to 9 will be on 99.1.
Let's go ahead and work in a very quick call from Ray. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Ray.
Good afternoon, guys. You may have talked about this. I apologize if you have, but I haven't been able to listen. I wanted to see what you guys' thoughts was about the linebacker from Texas that's transferring to Tennessee, and if there's anyone else that you guys might be know that might be coming or giving us a look.
Yeah, Vince, you touched on it earlier. This is the, I guess, the leading tackler for Texas last year, but you also called into question exactly what was working in front of him in terms of the Longhorns' defense.
Yeah, so we'll see what he can do at Tennessee and in the scheme as well, but really like him, very active, gets off blocks well, athletic. He's a huge upgrade and an immediate starter because he's been productive and we've seen him. I think he's an immediate starter at Tennessee. And as far as who else he'd go after, defensive lineman from Chattanooga, the Tennessee was in a recruiting battle for Jay Hardy, hit the transfer portal just yesterday, I believe. And so I think he would be at or near the top as a D lineman for Tennessee to try to add. So that would be the top name.
Ray,
bye,
sure
man, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much. Vince, we always appreciate you. Thank you so much. Have a great week and enjoy this open midweek, because I think we're back at it the next two Tuesdays.
That's right. And real quick, I wanted to say, don't be surprised on Trey Smith in Kansas City if he is competing for the starting right tackle spot in Kansas City. They have some good depth at guard, and that is the best avenue for him to start and play. If his medical checks out, watch for that potential for Trey Smith at right tackle. Even though guard is more of his long-term position, I think short-term you could see him compete at that spot. The Chiefs know he can play tackle. They like him there, and that's something to look for moving forward.
And, Vince, if folks don't already have it a part of their daily routine, they should pay a visit each day to 99.1thesportsanimal.com.
Yep, and go to 99.1thesportsanimal.com. I have a blog about those fits for the VFLs and the NFL, the three that we know of so far, and then lots more on the draft and VFLs and the NFL and everybody's blogs and daily content on UT Athletics. So all that at 99.1thesportsanimal.com.
Vince, sure to appreciate it. Have a great week.
All right, guys, have a great one. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right, that's Vince Ferrara. His appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.